Best performance by an actor.
And you get to start this one.
As far as film goes, I really, really like, obviously, Sean Bean in Game of Thrones. But I'm also going to give props to Nicolas Coster-Waldau.
Mm-hmm.
They both just play off each other really well. The guy also plays Robert on screen. I've liked him in a lot of things as well. Yeah.
Okay.
But Sean Bean, just because he's obviously the protagonist that you follow mostly in the show. I've always liked Sean Bean from what I've seen on screen, and like he to me, like, just you just constantly root for this guy. I don't know, maybe it's just me.
Have you gotten to finish the season yet?
I am on episode 8 right now.
Okay, so I can't talk about too much then with Sean Bean. All right.
Oh, so something's gonna happen. Thanks for telling me that.
Well, yes, something is gonna happen. Yes.
Spoiler.
All right. So you went with TV first. So I'll do that, but then I'll go with acting first, or with film first. Also, Bryan Cranston, Breaking Bad. How easy is that?
Mm-hmm.
It's the best performance on TV year in and year out, and that includes Jon Hamm, who's amazing on Mad Men, Michael C. Hall, who is electrifying as Dexter Morgan, and all the rest. Cranston stands above every year, and I love Charlie Hunnam on Sons of Anarchy, and he's great too, but it's Cranston. It's just not close. I'm sorry. It's amazing. Walter White's one of the two or three best characters I've ever seen on TV.
Only reason I didn't say Dexter is because I was actually not the biggest fan of the overall season.
Hmm.
You will eventually get to that, and you'll understand.
2 days from now, I'm going to sit down and watch the entire thing in one sitting.
Yeah. And you'll probably say something about that. I at least hope you will. As far as movies for me...
let me go first.
All right.
Because you went first on the last one.
All right.
Mine is kind of... Maybe it's out of the box. Maybe it's not. There have been some really good performances this year. I really like Brad Pitt and Jonah Hill in Moneyball, for example. There have been some really good stuff. The one thing that continues to come back to me is Ryan Gosling in Drive. That movie, I'm never going to forget that movie. I don't know that I will ever see it again because of how brutal it is and just how hard to watch it is in parts. But Gosling owned the screen in a way that few people do. And to me, he may be the most talented and best actor in this country right now. It is amazing watching him on screen, so I would give it to Gosling in Drive purely because of how well he played that character.
All right, I'm going to go with Michael Fassbender as Magneto.
Wow, I like that choice. Very interesting.
The minute I saw him on screen, it was something about that. And then like the way he played Magneto, he didn't really act like a... Why does the name escape me? All of a sudden, the guy who originally played Magneto and obviously Gandalf and all that shit.
McKellen?
Yeah, Ian McKellen. He didn't play an Ian McKellen ripoff. He didn't mimic him. He didn't portray a younger version of him. He played his own Magneto. A very dark, a very motivated and challenged Magneto. And during a lot of the scenes, especially the scene where he's in the bar, And he beats up the guys by throwing a knife through his hand, executes the other one, mid-air gun, whatever, and all that kind of stuff while interrogating him. I thought to myself, man, I want to see this guy in a fucking Bourne movie. Like,
very
something similar to that. Kind of like Jeremy Renner in Mission Impossible 4. I was like, I cannot wait to see this motherfucker in Bourne.
Yeah, me either, man.
So, but that kind of thing. Like, I'm sitting here watching Fassbender on screen. Like, I really want to watch, like, a spy action movie with Fassbender. Just like a James Bond-ish kind of movie. I would be down for seeing that.
McAvoy is no slouch either.
No, he's not. But I'd rather see Fassbender in that type of role than damn Taylor Lautner. Which we will not get into how bad that movie was, but I did not see.
I want to give one other performance some props. And this isn't going to be a nominated performance or anything, and I'm sure we're overlooking a lot of really great stuff.
He's nominated for getting his best friend's girl pregnant and then triggered it. And the raise the little fucking man.
Oh, that is hateful.
Hate.
Yeah, exactly. The thing, and you saw this first. You got to see it in a sneak preview, and I had to see it a few weeks later when it actually released. But I want to give props to Joseph Gordon-Levitt for 50-50. Not because of 50-50. I've liked Joseph Gordon-Levitt for a long time, probably. I mean, obviously what he did in Inception, then I finally got to see 500 Days of Summer, and it was amazing, and a lot of the stuff that he's done has been just wonderful. But his performance in 50-50 should not go overlooked, nor should that film. which is one of those that just kind of came out and was brilliant, and you either saw it or you didn't, but hopefully when it comes out on DVD, you take an opportunity to watch it, because it was one of the real gems of 2011 for me.
It was. I like the writing of the movie. I like how it just developed. I actually saw it the other day. I can't remember what magazine it was. It was one of those where it's basically like overrated things. And I was like, really? Would you say 50 Things is overrated by any means?
No.
Like, as we talked about in Goose Over a little bit, or you think
I don't
just
ever
enough,
hear about
not
it.
Enough credit? Okay.
I don't think you can call something overrated when you rarely ever hear about it. It just all came right. out and it was a great film. I didn't think it was overrated at all. I really liked it.
I just want to make sure it wasn't me.
No, it wasn't you. I mean, you like I said, you saw it a few weeks before me. You said, hey, you need to go see this, and you were right. But yeah, it's a great film, and Seth Rogen wasn't annoying. He was very good. Not that he is all the time, but he has a tendency to play the same kind of sad sack role that kind of gets on your nerves after a while. In this film, he did that for a bit, but he also pulled himself together and turned out to be a good friend. And it was a really good story. Soundtrack was awesome. And Levitt again showed that he's one of the three guys. I believe that him, Gosling, and Renner are the three guys to watch. Those are the three guys over the next 10, 15 years that are going to develop into the real upper echelon of movies. So there you go. What's next?
Next up, we got Best Book.
All right. You get to go first on this one. And like I said, because I know you don't have as much time as I do, downtime, in which to read stuff. I don't know if you read any of the stuff that came out this year, but you can then, if that's not applicable to you, you can name your favorite or the book that you enjoyed the most that you read this year, whether it came out this year or not.
Ironically, I'll say this first off. I did get a book this year to read. I will get to it eventually if she's listening still to this. I will eventually read Ender's Game.
I saw that on your card. Table. I saw that on your table. I figured you would maybe already read it.
Do you remember where you saw that? Because I don't know. Oh, wait, no, it's next to my nightstand. I got it. I see it right in front of me. Anyway, I will eventually read that because that is the first gift I have gotten from my current girlfriend and probably my last girlfriend, if you get what I mean.
Well, then.
Anyway, so I will eventually read that. Second off, I did finally finish reading the Harry Potter series. So for me, stuff that I've actually read, that's the best thing I've read. Because I remember my reaction at the very end of the book, and I was like, damn it, I feel accomplished.
I can read.
I can. I don't read good, but I can read.
takes me back to Screech in the Saved by the Bell, the middle school years. I can't read.
I'm
waiting for him to laugh.
Oh, the bully?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. Something right. I do want to read. I do want to read the Steve Jobs book. I will say that.
I am interested in reading. I have that on my iPad. I just haven't had time to read it yet.
Nice.
I read a bunch of stuff as usual this year. I am a bookworm. Stuff that didn't come out this year. I've
What's up,
finished.
Big worm?
Yeah, exactly. Big purr. Of things that didn't come out this year that I was finally able to sit down and read. I was glad to finally get to finish The Girl Who Played with Fire and read The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest over the last week. Love those books. Love that trilogy. Love that author. Really wish that he could have, stuck around for a while so I could have seen where it was going to go. But the trilogy does have an ending. So you're not left hanging or anything like that. So I would say that. Stuff that came out this year. Really like Sex on the Moon, which I've talked about in other podcasts written by Ben Mezrich, who wrote Busting Vegas and Bringing Down the House, which became 21, and then he wrote The Accidental Billionaires, which you may better know as The Social Network, from Aaron Sorkin and David Fincher's treatment. Sex on the Moon is also going to be a movie. It's about another brilliant young kid, which is what all of Mezrich's books generally are about, is some brilliant, usually Ivy League kid, who just does something amazing, either positive or negatively, and this kid, out of love or just out of pure, desire or whatever, ends up stealing a bunch of moon rocks from NASA while he's down there. And that's a huge crime, and he goes to jail for many, many years and ends up helping to tell this story along with a really good friend of his. And that book was really good. If I could only name one book, it would be Michael Vay, Prisoner of Cell 25, which was written by Richard Paul Evans, which is a Harry Potter-style book. This is the first of the series. But it is, if you like Percy Jackson, if you like Harry Potter, if you like Fablehaven, if you like other stuff by Rick Riordan or those kind of things, Hunger Games, that kind of stuff, you need to find Michael Vay, The Prisoner of Cell 25, and read it. Second book I think is going to be out late next year or maybe early 2013, but really good, not that long. It's about, you know, 340, 350, so not exactly as involved as Rowling, although it's about as long as The Sorcerer's Stone, maybe a little longer. But good read, great message, great story. So if I could only name one, I would say Michael Vay, which hopefully a lot of you have read, but if you have not, you should definitely check that out. So there you go. Nice. What's next?
We got Best Music.
All right. You think you know what I'm going to say here. Some of you out there, at least, think you know what I'm going to say here because you've heard me playing it for you over the last couple of weeks. In person, a couple of you, including my equal co-host here, Andrew. But that is not the number one album of the year. This is where I'm going to pick two, but one is, well, I'm not. I'm just going to name a second one. It's not really close. The number one, the best album of the year was The Whole Love by Wilco, which came out in September. Came out in stores the week that I got to see Wilco at Ryman Auditorium. It's just a magical, just wonderful piece of music. Great from start to finish. It was actually the first one that they published under their own label. It's a masterpiece from start to finish. You should absolutely listen to it, no matter what kind of music you're into, unless it's like, if you like all rap or all country, maybe not. But, well, if you like all country, maybe give it a shot. But it's really just a terrific album. And then if you want to go more mainstream, stuff that a lot of people have heard, I would go with Florence and the Machine's Ceremonials. I have the deluxe edition myself, but Florence was in the top 15 of our top 30 countdown at WWHR for the end of year at the radio station, deservedly so. She killed it on Saturday Night Live, one of the best voices I've ever heard from a female artist, particularly in my lifetime. Ceremonials is a great, great CD, so that, you know, that deserves some mention, but it's Wilco, The Whole Love, and if you haven't heard it, go find it. There you go.
I want to say for me, because I don't listen nearly to as much music as you do, and I don't really just try different things, but you have convinced me to try the latest Donald Glover CD.
Yep, that's what I thought you were going to say.
I have every bit of love for the talent that man has, his caliber of acting, and it's just straight up ingenuity in all together. He is remarkably talented, and I hope that, knock on wood, if Community ends in the next year and a half or so, that he continues to do marvelous things with his life.
So you were referring to Childish Gambino.
Oh, yes.
Name of the album is Camp, and it's a little different for some of the mixtapes he's put out over the years, but it caught fire. It actually came out the same week as Drake's new CD, and more people were talking about Childish Gambino than they were Drake. And deservedly so. It's a great record. I'm glad that I was able to let you and Adam actually get to hear the full thing and not just excerpts when I was down there. And I'm also glad that you named it, because that means I didn't waste your time by having you listen to it.
No, not at all. I definitely, it's something that's just kind of easy on too. So and I hate to say this because a lot of people compare it to it, but like, if you like Kanye's kind of style, it's similar to that, but really he takes it to another level for himself.
And he's not pretentious.
That would be correct. Best TV show.
All right, we're splitting this into drama and comedy, so you get to go first, and you can pick whichever genre you want to start with.
Do we need to argue drama going anywhere but Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
Okay, I know you definitely have some of things. For me, Game of Thrones, because there's so much, like, just entertainment watching the show. The story, like, there's so much going on, but it's not annoying. Kind of like with Dexter. Like, a lot of stuff in Dexter, there's a lot of characters, a lot of side stories. You could really give a rat's ass by everybody on the show. Game of Thrones, where it's like, there's so much going on, but every storyline really interests me. Now, there's some characters in that show that annoy the shit out of you when you watch it, like Joffrey's character who's spoiled.
Well, you gotta have villains.
Of Ed. Yeah, you have to have villains, you're correct. But, you know, they're worth noting on screen, though, and the performances are really well done. Not like fucking like wasteful characters such as The Office, where you have too many characters. Sometimes there's too many side stories and too many little like just things you just don't give. Like, I don't care about Meredith being a drunk all the time or being easy. I'd rather watch Creed being a creepy little loser, but whatever. I could care less about Daryl finding a love life. I could care less about Ryan trying to be skeezy, whatever. Sometimes it's funny, like Wolf.com. But Game of Thrones, every single, it's like a big puzzle. Each one of them for the storyline, this main story purpose, has a reason for being in the show. And I think that they tell it very well.
And I think that it helps that the guy who wrote it knows what the hell he's doing. Like, he writes a story that has 1,000 different characters in it, but from all that I've heard, and I, again, can't say it on first-hand experience because I'm planning to start reading them this weekend, is that he handles a ton of different characters masterfully. And as a result, I think it makes it easier for HBO and the people that are associated with that show, including George R.R. Martin, who's one of the consulting producers, to craft a show where it never, it's busy, but it's never so busy that you're confused. You kind of know what's going down at all times, and it takes a lot of talent to do that. So, there, yeah, Game of Thrones definitely is on my short list. I think that if we could only name one TV show that it's not on right now, but is the best show on TV, for me, it's still Mad Men.
Definitely.
But we couldn't name that because it hasn't run this calendar year. It starts up again in February, which I'm counting the days towards. Other shows that deserve to be mentioned, Justified, which was fabulous. Boardwalk Empire, which was really good. Walking Dead, which a lot of people apparently, I read somewhere, are not liking, but I'm still really enjoying it. And I think it's closer now to what Kirkman would want, in my opinion, than what it had been previously. Sons of Anarchy, I talk about all the time. It is number 2 on my list behind the number 1 show, Breaking Bad. And I know you can't say anything about that because you really haven't seen Breaking Bad.
You kind of flip-flop back and forth on those two shows at times.
They were tied in my rankings for a long time. But every time that I write them down, Breaking Bad comes first, and then the 1B is Sons of Anarchy. So they're both such good shows, and I treasure them so much. But Breaking Bad is a once-in-a-lifetime show. It is Dexter without the annoying crap. It is... Go ahead.
Is it 30 minutes long or is it an hour long?
It's an hour.
Okay.
It's a 43-minute episode-ish.
Okay.
Because it isn't... I mean, it's not premium. It's AMC. So you watch it. It's the same thing Mad Men is.
Mm-hmm.
It's just unbelievable. There's really nothing bad to say about it. And it ended in one of the all-time great season finales, as it generally does. But Cranston's performance as Walter White is something that you just don't see on TV on any level. It's like when people will ask in 50 years the greatest drama characters ever, Walter White's going to be in that list. Don Draper is definitely going to be in that list. Dexter's probably going to be somewhere near that list. Before it's over, I would imagine somebody from Game of Thrones is going to be in that list. Tony Soprano is going to be in that list. But Walter White's going to be near the top, if not at the top. And Cranston has shown just how just extraordinarily talented he is as a thespian with what he has done with Breaking Bad, which is, at its essence, a story about a guy who gets cancer and decides he wants to provide for his family. So he gets into, because he's an incredibly brilliant chemist, he gets into the meth trade. And it goes from there into so many other things. And it's so well acted from top to bottom that, to me, it's just not all that close. Sons of Anarchy is the only other thing I put there. And right below Sons of Anarchy is Game of Thrones. So your answer is certainly right there. And we both adore that show. But Breaking Bad, to me, is clearly the best drama on TV. And the best comedy, I think we might agree on. But my favorite comedy is Parks and Recreation. Well,
it's
so
close.
That's good.
It's so close.
I know it is. Community's right there for me too.
It is. That was gonna be mine.
I mean, it's, and I don't want to slight Community by not mentioning it. Parks and Recreation has not had a bad episode in I can't tell you how long. The show is just so well done, and you and I both kind of decided to catch up on it at the same time, and it was just a joy to do. I've watched those episodes. I've watched many of them more than once, and Parks and Rec is just. To me, it's the epitome of what comedy should strive to be. And then the one that's off the radar, which you're finally starting to catch up with, is Louie, and that deserves to be mentioned also.
Well, I love about Parks and Rec is like you mentioned this, like people talk. Obviously, one of the best characters is Ron Swanson. People give a lot of props also to Amy Poehler's character, but people really, I don't say they forget, but you kind of overshadow the fact that how subtle Andy's character is, because he went from being season one being like the biggest jerk on TV. To being hated, the way he treated Anne, the way he's just like this nobody who's just has no ambition, wants you know, everything handed to him. He's just a big jackass on TV. To now, I would say one of the most lovable characters I've seen on TV in a while.
And you didn't even mention Aziz.
Yeah, because Andy's just funny because of the stuff that he says that he doesn't mean to be funny about.
No, yeah,
like with him and April, Andy's got an innocence about him that I like. Where April was at one time where she's like, "Did you eat the frost?" Seeing him, and he's like, "No," and he got his hand stuck in the jar, and he's like trying to wave it off behind him, and he's like, "You look like a bear trying to eat honey."
Burt Macklin's son.
He's got that. Just his childish demeanor, which is so innocent and funny at the same time. I like the one episode where Ben and Leslie's character were eating in their home, and the minute Leslie got up and left the food on the table, Ben goes, "I can hear you breathing," and they pop out of nowhere behind a fucking like laundry room closet. Yeah. And scarf down the food. He's like, "Oh my God, I'm so hungry." And just maul the food and just swallows it whole.
Here's the best thing that Parks ever did. The best thing Parks ever did was put the two characters that are supposed to be together together. They put April and Andy together. Didn't drag it out for the sake of some horrible drama. They dragged it out for a few episodes. They put them together. They got them married. And then they had them be fun together as a couple without all the drama that goes with relationship tension, particularly in comedies, that drives me insane. They put them together because they fit and they're happy, and that's that. And then Parks continues to roll. Both characters still have a purpose, and that's not the source of what's going on the show. And to me, so many other shows don't do that correctly. And Parks has now done it right twice, because now they're doing it right with Leslie and Ben. Exactly right. It's like, there's no reason for this show for us to hate all the dramatic elements that go into the couples being kept apart and stuff. Just put them together and keep the show funny and keep the writing crisp. And, you know, the actors continue to care about what they're doing. And then you have a wonderful show. And I think that they have mastered that.
Nothing's forced on screen. That's what I love about it. One of the big things that that's so good about Andy and April is the episode where the world's coming to an end. And they start doing Andy's bucket list. And Andy's like, "I want to make the world's best grilled cheese sandwich." So she's eating. She's like, "Oh, this is really good." Baby, I didn't come out to make a really good grilled cheese. I want to make the best grilled cheese. And he's like, on the batch number, whatever. He's like, no, this is the best. This is the best. This is the best. And then the other one was, he wanted to hold $1,000 in his hand.
Right.
So he go to the bank and withdraw all their money, which is like $1,100. And he gets it in hundreds. And he's like, this is really not what I thought it was going to be. So the next scene right after is like him getting $1,000 in one. And he's like, "Oh my God." He like wants to roll around in it. It's so funny because it's not that it's pointless. It's just that you can just laugh at it and just kind of go with it so easily.
Agreed. There's no debate there. And Community deserves to be mentioned. It really does. And so does Louie. But Parks and Rec is the perfect comedy to me.
Community, I love because it's so smart on so many different planes and levels. One of my favorite episodes is Dungeons and Dragons. The other one being the altered reality episodes. And it's definitely one for anyone who's ever been a fan of like Highlander or Sliders, or like if you read comics in general and you understand what the multiverse is, or if like you've seen Back to the Future and the point where like every decision you make in your life causes a different reaction and causes a different time loop and could end up in something differently. And hence in the part where they're all sitting around having pizza, or they're playing a board game and they order a pizza. Well, the minute the doorbell rings and the pizza guy's there, Winger's character has a dice and he's like, "Here's a dice, starting from my left, 1 through 6. Whoever's number it rolls on goes and gets the pizza." That doing so, Albed, being as we mentioned before, catches his wrist first before he throws the dice at him. Because Jeff, you realize you're causing a time warp reality timeline change where like every roll has a different circumstance in life. He's like, "Yeah, sure I am." He tosses it up, and each roll they show what would happen if this person went to go get the pizza. If this person went to go get the pizza, what would happen? Never seen that on TV. Never seen that. And the way they did it was entertaining, smart, funny. It leaves a lot of believability in that just concept in general, because it makes me think, like, to me, like, how would my life be different if I didn't make certain decisions in my life?
Yeah, I think it would be fair to say that both of us would say Parks 1A, Community 1B. that those two shows both deserve to be mentioned in this category at the very top. And we've said a lot of positive stuff over many podcasts about Community, particularly the Five Shows podcast that we did a while back and things like that. But that show is really unique. You don't see anything else like that on TV. You also don't see anything like Louis. But those two shows particularly are two of the things that NBC has done right, except that they haven't ever scheduled them right or advertised them right. But you should definitely, if you're not watching Parks at this point, I think you probably are. Most of the people are. The ratings have gone far up. But we cannot get it across to you any stronger than this. If you're not watching Community, we really need you to stop listening to the podcast and go download it right now. Well, wait 5 minutes until we're done and then do it. How about that? Mm-hmm. All right, so we got two more categories. The 2012 one, which will be last, and this one.
Best film.
I think we both agree. And it's a real cheap choice, but I think Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2 was by far the best film I saw this year.
I don't think it's a cheap choice. I think, one, that franchise had 9 years or so to build the hype to this last movie, and it made it much props to this to the whole studio to get it going that far along and still succeed as high as they did with that entire, not just movie, but the entire franchise is really well deserved and should get some kind of like a applause. Because think about it this way. Narnia. They could have made 7 Narnia books, but the way they wrote the first two, there was like no chance from the get-go. Even the studio that originally did it, Disney dropped it after two years or two movies. Same can be said for Aragorn. Aragorn, what was it, 4 years ago when that was done for the screen? That bombed us all hell. That could have been 3 or 4 books. But for Harry Potter to go on for the 7 books and 8.5 to 9 years in doing so, to get as much recognition, to get as much hype, and succeed and meet those expectations, that's something worth nothing. So to say that's a cop out, I think it's you know, whatever.
You make a good argument. The only reason I say it's cop out just because I think it's the easy answer and it's the right answer. And I think the other thing that should be mentioned about the Harry Potter franchise is that it is so rare to see this much time pass and nobody get an ego and walk away.
Mm-hmm.
Like nobody pull a Tobey Maguire, for example. Or right. Something like that, where they don't want to get typecast as this, you know. I don't want to get typecast as the character that actually makes money. I want to go and try to prove my worth in other things. No, these people have talent, and they're going to move on. Radcliffe is doing amazing on Broadway. Emma Watson's going to slip right into Beauty and the Beast next year. And they're all going to have good careers going forward. And then they had a good mix of smart, well-established adult actors like Alan Rickman and Michael Gambon and all the people that made up the series. But the reason why this is the best film of the year to me is because it was an almost perfect interpretation of my favorite book of all time. I love the way the Harry Potter series ended in print from Rowling, and I thought that David Yates and company did it a perfect send-off, and it ended flawlessly. It was shot well. There was really nothing really to hate about it. It was just, I walked out and I was just like, that is exactly what I would have wanted to see. There were, just a couple of nitpicky things where they changed stuff, but nothing monumental. You got just about everything that you could have wanted, except that the final fight between Voldy and Harry took place in front of nobody. That was really about the only thing, but it was just, there were some, and I'm going to ask you this just because we both mentioned Harry Potter and we even had an entire cast dedicated to the world of Hogwarts and wizardry in the past. If you couldn't name Harry Potter, what would your answer be?
Warrior.
Interesting.
I mean, I like Drive a lot,
mm-hmm.
but the difference, and the reason I say Warrior, because Warrior, I already am scheming to go to Best Buy tomorrow and just buy again on Blu-ray. I rented the first time. I definitely want to own it because I want to see the structure that they use to write the movie, surround the movie. I want to see the cast interviews. I want to see just everything about the movie, because everything about the movie, from the acting to the way they shot it to the soundtrack, I thought was done beautifully, except for the small little loops here and there. Like, what the hell is Nick Nolte doing in the very end of the finale? And you know, what would happen. But you made a good point when we talked about earlier, and you said that they kind of left it open to your interpretation, and you can just imagine what they could happen. Sometimes it's better for a movie to end that way, where it's not just a closed book, said and done, and everything's there. I think, yeah, you're right in that point. Warrior to me was that, and I would definitely give it for me a second place behind that. I definitely want to watch Warrior again, and again, I love everything about it.
It's up there on my list, and I would never have said that, obviously, had you not convinced me via that post to watch the film. And I looked at it today in the store, and it's a little pricey, so I'll wait till it comes down, but I plan to buy it as well. Two that stand out to me, and there were a lot of really good superhero films this year. Captain America gets overlooked, but it was a brilliant film. Mm-hmm. X-Men we already talked about. Thor was really good.
Thor was amazing.
Pretty much everything that wasn't Green Lantern was really good. Moneyball is a great movie. 50-50 was an excellent movie. Ides of March was really good. Real Steel's a real surprise of the year because it was actually really good. But if I had to name a second one, it would be real close between Ghost Protocol, which is really ironic, but it was just that damn good to me from a pure entertainment standpoint, and The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, just because I thought it was overall a really good interpretation of what Stieg Larsson wanted to do with the book. And it's a very disturbing, and at times you almost have to look away in terms of some of the imagery that's used, but it's so well done, so well acted, and the source material is so rich that it really helps. So I would go with those two. But yeah, the Warrior came out of nowhere. That's not something I expected to like it, but I expected I'd feel like I felt like after I saw Rocky, and I didn't feel that way. Mm-hmm. I felt like I watched a much richer experience, not just a throwaway film. So I like that choice a lot. So there's 2011, and our final category as we sign off is most exciting 2012
project. Sorry, I like the echoing.
And we're going to eliminate two things that you can't say.
The Avengers?
And?
Twilight Part 2?
Dark Knight Rises.
Oh.
Sure, Twilight, yeah.
Sure. Yeah, okay.
whatever, weirdo. All right, so those two are out because they're too obvious. So what would your answer be then?
Mass Effect 3.
Nice. I like it. I didn't even think about it, and I love it.
I'm just ready. I want to see how the story ends. I want them to go out on top. I want to go on a bang. I loved one's story. I didn't love the gameplay at times. But the story was really good. The ending was really good.
Vehicle stuff was great in the first game.
But the shooting was awful. Oh, yeah, you can go to hell with that. It was great because they pick up right where they left off, sort of. They kind of give you a little openness in the end. And again, you could take the storyline however you wanted to. You visit a lot of your past. And depending on how you play in the first one, really does impact how you play in the second one. Sometimes, you know, whether Rex was dead or not, or you know, the other guy and Ashley. Depends also really heavily on whether or not you're female or male in the game. So thrilled to Martin Sheen's performance in that movie, in that game. Yeah, I say movie because it pretty much was like playing a movie. Voice acting was wonderful. People knock on John Shepard's voice in the game. I like it a lot. I think the character is great, I think. The voice acting is great. Just the entertainment in the game goes so far along, from gameplay to the story to side missions to leveling up, everything to me. And I cannot wait for the third one just to get here. I want to just get fat. I want to put on 10 pounds in one weekend, sitting around in my sweats playing it and not do anything, turn off communications and ignore the world.
And that's probably what we'll both do. Yeah, I mean, I cannot wait to play that one myself. I love that answer. I did not even think of video games when I was thinking of 2012 prospects, but I'm going to go with The Hunger Games just because I think it's going to be a huge, huge situation when it hits. Jennifer Lawrence's star is on the rise ever since Winter's Bone, so this is going to be her arrival to a lot of people who have not been paying attention to how good she is. That's another series that I've got to sit down and read. I've read almost all of the first book, but I'm going to start it again from the beginning and see if I can get through Suzanne Collins' Tale of Violence and Anti-War. kind of sentiment that goes through them, but I'm curious to read those three books. They're obviously well-received, and they've been major successes. And that film, to me, looks like it's going to be Twilight, but not annoying, like, in terms of how it's seen. Like, it's not really the same kind of material. So I would say The Hunger Games, although I think we would both say The Dark Knight Rises and The Avengers. That's why we took them out.
I would also say the resurrection of the Indianapolis Colts next season. I think that's going to be a project.
It's going to be a project, all right. Now, I don't know.
I think the Andrew Luck project is going to be really. Maybe they pass on him. Maybe he goes to the Vikings.
Well, here's the rumor. The rumor is that to get the first pick, there are teams that are willing to give up 3 first round picks, 2 second round picks, and a player to get the rights to Andrew Luck. So think about that for a second. Think about if you have Peyton Manning and he's healthy for the next 4 years, what you could do with that kind of availability to pick up talent.
The difference is, though, is that I never really was on the Andrew Luck wagon because I didn't get to see him play because he plays for Stanford. But I watched that USC game. I watched the highlights doing everything. When they went to, what, triple overtime?
Mm-hmm.
And he got that fumble, ran it in, all that kind of shit. I will say this. Andrew Luck, more than I say Cam Newton when he came out, and Cam Newton's proving me wrong and everyone else wrong, he's breaking Peyton Manning's passing record, which who would have guessed he'd breaking his passing record as a rookie. But I think Luck's ready to play now is the difference between him and many quarterbacks coming to the league. Ponder got thrown into it with the Vikings. He wasn't ready. I don't think he's ready. T.J. Yates got thrown into it, and he's hit and miss. Tebow's always been a project. Brady Quinn was thrown into it. Only a few certain elite, I guess, can handle that pressure and handle that moment and handle the NFL stardom / performance level. Matt Ryan being one of them. Joe Flacco, occasionally Ben Roethlisberger, notably with 2 rings. Tom Brady. And we all know Tom Brady, you know, being Tom Brady. But I think Luck could definitely fit that category, seeing how he handles himself, how he handles his team, how he runs that team. That, to me, is the difference between him and, like, Jake Locker, Christian Ponder, and who else? Andy Dalton is handling. I think the more that Andy Dalton went to a better, more well-kept team, in a sense. And Marvin Lewis is a good coach. But
he went to a team defense. He went to a team with a good defense, and he also went alongside A.J. Green.
Exactly.
Who gave him a number one receiver who was hungry and who was a rookie and who just has massive amounts of talent. So that helped. But I also like Dalton, and I thought he was a good pick when they took him, and I'm not surprised to see how he's played, and I really like the kid a lot.
But I think Luck's definitely ready to play. And he could almost fit in any system. I think he's coachable, and he would definitely do, I think, better than like a Colt McCoy, a Jimmy Clausen, a Vince Young.
Right.
Maybe I'm wrong, but we'll see.
Well, that'll be interesting. All right. That is it. That is a wrap, ladies and gentlemen, for Certifiable Total Recall in 2011. A little bit of housekeeping to take care of. A lot of cool stuff to come next year. Early next year, we're going to sit down with Brian Dole. Well, we've known him for a while. He's a friend of mine. He's an author who just put out the first book of his Solstice Chronicles and is apparently writing his second one now. You can find that on Amazon. If you're interested in hearing more sports from me, I'm now doing Beyond the Box Score, another podcast alongside Jeremy Brown, who's another broadcasting savant at Western Kentucky University. We do that in the studio. You can find that also on iTunes by searching Beyond the Box Score if you're interested. You can also find us at CTR Podcast on Twitter, or you can search Certifiable Total Recall on Facebook or email the show ctrpod@gmail.com. Next year, another thing you're going to see is there's going to be email addresses that end at ctrpodcast.com instead, so because we're going to be opening up a website, doing a lot of other cool things. We hope that you have enjoyed the 2011 ride with us. If you have not paid attention, or if you've not personally gotten to experience some of the things that won awards tonight, you definitely might want to check that stuff out, particularly Game of Thrones, Breaking Bad, stuff like that. You might want to go out of your way to pay attention to that. But I know I will say this, and then I will let Andy send it off. It has been a joy to let this become, it started in April in its infancy as just a little bit of fun. All of a sudden, I decided to tape a phone conversation we were having about 24 that went on for 2.5 hours. And now we're sitting here 8 months later with a podcast on iTunes that regularly ranks within the top 5,000 on a number of different podcast sites. And it has been a wonderfully enriching experience to see some of the reaction we've gotten, to talk to some of the people that have gotten to listen to the show. And we only expect it to grow, and that is only because of you. So hopefully you had a great Christmas. Hopefully you have a good New Year. And I can't wait, and I'm sure Andy can't, to speak to you guys again real soon as we kick off 2012 together here at Certifiable Total Recall next week when we step back in the studio.
Remember, you can find us at CTR Podcast at ramorgan@netcom.com. No? Okay. No, but you can find my co-host Jason Martin at jmart100 on Facebook and Twitter. You can find myself at avan360 at both Facebook and Twitter as well. You can find our podcast also, like he said, at CTR Podcast on Twitter and ctrpod@gmail.com. Find us. Give us some shout-outs. Give us some tips. Give us some ideas. We definitely respond. And we are looking forward to next year of 2012 of growing this podcast of the Certified Total Recall. But again, he is my co-host, Jason Martin from Bowling, Kentucky. I am Andrew Van of Simpsonville, officially South Carolina. This is the last podcast of 2011. We out. That's classic. San Diego.
Was until you said that.
Oh. On the side of the road.